Okay, quick rant. Yes, we all know dealing with the post office sucks, along with the DMV. Those are like, you know, two cardinal rules of life. I mean, I have nothing against the workers. It's more the people running the place. I mean, you go in the post office, there's a big line and one fucking guy is working there. I had to check on a package and I was working like 12-hour shifts, so I couldn't get down there. So I called the local post office. I actually called a couple of them, you know, to check on it. I called probably at least 50 times over a couple days, and they didn't pick up the phone. Not even once. I mean, I would have felt better if someone picked it up and said hello and then hung up on me. I mean, the post office was ghosting me. But yeah, it's just kind of accepted that they're not going to pick up the phone. And what other business on the planet flat out just doesn't pick up their phone? I mean, can you imagine? I mean, there's only one U.S. Postal Service, so we got to play by their rules. But, you know, come on, guys. Try a little harder. And quickly, a couple of post office-related jokes. What stays in the corner and travels all over the world? A stamp. And what begins with E and ends with E and only has one letter in it? An envelope. Sounds pretty good, huh? And speaking of quality control, I got a new Mac last year, one of those AirBook Mac things. It kind of sucks. It's kind of flimsy. I used to have a MacBook Pro when I was editing it, which was way more solid, but hey, you get what you pay for. But anyway, like 2 months after I bought it, it got like a dead pixel in the middle. And then a couple nights ago, I, you know, went to bed, closed my computer, opened up the next morning, and there's some kind of glitch all over the screen. I brought it into Apple. They said it was some kind of damage, but I never dropped the damn thing. So, yeah, it's kind of a piece of junk, to be honest. I think replacing the screen is like $600. The whole thing was $1,200. So it's like, I don't know what I'm going to do. But anyway, Steve Jobs would be rolling in his unmarked grave. Okay, enough tomfoolery. And weirdly enough, in the Middle Ages, Tom Fole, T-H-O-M-E, and last name F-O-L-E, was a name assigned to someone who was a bit dumb. I don't know how they came up with it, but anyway, that eventually evolved into tomfoolery. So see, we've all learned something today. But yeah, let's talk about a new great L.A. detective noir show, some thoughts on acting, Marlon Brando, and a little Oliver Reed.
You are my density. You are my density.
First off, an apology of sorts. On one of the last episodes, I said some kind of joke, and then I followed it up with, "That's what she said," which was kind of tacky and frankly unnecessary. So my apologies. I'm not perfect. I'm always trying to, you know, work on things and make myself better. Quickly, the actor Lou Gossett Jr. recently died. He was famously in An Officer and a Gentleman from 1982 with Richard Gere and Deborah Winger. It was shot in the cool little town of Port Townsend in Washington State. And I also used to love the corny Iron Eagle from 1986 with Lou Gossett Jr. and the kind of dud Jason Gedrick, directed by the cool Sidney J. Fury. But I recently read about this movie, Digstown, D-I-G-G-S-T-O-W-N, from 1992, directed by the talented Michael Ritchie, with Lou Gossett Jr., a great James Woods, a villainous Bruce Dern, and a young as hell and ravishing Heather Graham. Man, I don't think I had watched it before, and it blew me away. It's kind of a boxing con man movie with cool twists, and you never really know what's coming till the end. It's kind of reminiscent of The Sting, but I was blown away, man. It's only streaming on one of those like ultra annoying free channels. I think Freevee, where you got to watch fucking ads every once in a while. But I mean, the movie's worth it if it sounds like it's up your alley. And speaking of a great new show on Apple TV that is so up my alley, it's ridiculous. It's called Sugar. It's set in Los Angeles. It stars Colin Farrell as a movie-obsessed loner who has or had a substance problem and is a bit of an unreliable narrator, but tries to be a decent guy. Does this sound familiar to anyone? And he's a detective. But anyway, he's trying to locate the daughter of a big-time old-school movie producer. There's only been two episodes yet, and there's something very odd with these scenes. There's supposed to be like a major twist in the middle. But yeah, something is happening. I can't, it's like the scenes are cut in a weird way. It's like, is he dreaming part of it? Is this in someone's head? Because it's not, something ain't right with what we're seeing. But I am just like salivating for whatever happens in it. It's totally great. And the show has these scenes of like classic movies, just like interspersed, sometimes randomly, sometimes related to the action going on, sometimes continuing the action going on, and sometimes not related. You know, scenes with Robert Mitchum and Humphrey Bogart, Jenna Rollins. And in an early scene where Colin Farrell's kind of coworker gives him a gun, he doesn't like guns, but she tells him it was the actual gun from like a Glenn Ford movie that he used in the movie. And he's like, wow. And that just that scene itself, I was like, okay, I'm in love with the show. I don't care where it goes. I'm into it. And I love Colin Farrell in almost everything. But yeah, something's off with the show. But I can't wait to find out what's going on with it. And kind of a cool movie. It's from 1982. It's called Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, directed by Carl Reiner. It has Steve Martin in it. Carl Reiner's also in it. Rachel Ward. But the interesting thing is it's shot in black and white. It's kind of a detective-y type thing. And the movie is just basically shot with, you know, scenes that they've shot, but then also all these old scenes from movies that are basically cut together as if that's the same movie. It's done really well. You know, there's just some, you know, great juxtapositions and stuff. Humphrey Bogart's in there, Alan Ladd, Ava Gardner, Barbara Stanwyck, a ton of people. But yeah, it's worth a watch. It's an interesting experiment. Check that out. And it's kind of weird how the movies have infiltrated this main character's life. And it totally connected with me because, I mean, movies have seeped their way into my everyday life. I mean, our lives are kind of like movies. I mean, we have our protagonist, our supporting characters, our love interests, our successes and our failures. I almost view life as if my eyes are cameras and just I'm watching a movie as it goes, hoping for a happy ending, but not anticipating one. But yeah, my life is a movie. And kind of in a weird way, I've almost actively choreographed my life to be kind of like a 80s Brian De Palma movie or a Paul Schrader movie, not so much the newer pretentious Schrader stuff. There's been some drama in my life. There's been some seediness and just some bizarre shit. I've made a lot of mistakes, but also had some victories. My life is a bit overlong, and I can be a pretentious bore, but I mean well. And I try to be genuine, and maybe I have one or two great performances left. My poor mom has to deal with me, and I'm a handful, but hey, you know, she was the casting director. But yeah, I'm painfully self-aware of almost all things all time, more or less, and it can be uncomfortable. Take a ride in my brain. Trust me, you wouldn't like it. Quickly. I always say quickly, and then it's a long story. But anyway, I brought my car in the other day to the service shop or whatever, and there was this young girl working there, maybe late 20s, cute girl. But more importantly, she had like a dynamo personality. And I was like, yes. I mean, I was bringing my car in to get worked on. But more importantly, there was just like a real genuine and interesting like moment between us. We just were hitting it off. And it's like, yes, do your job. But ultimately, it's the interactions with people that you remember, how they made you feel. I don't give a fuck if you're a real estate agent or a policeman or a stripper. Just be genuine and be interested in life and things and, you know, try to be nice to people. And anyway, it was just a nice little moment, and I left it at that. I didn't ask for her number or anything weird, not that she was interested in me in that way. But sometimes it's nice to just let a nice moment be nice and then get out of there. Okay, Jesus, let's move on here to, let's see, Marlon Brando. Of course, the legend. And talk about being genuine. That was his specialty. But there's a new book on Marlon Brando, appropriately titled Marlon Brando, Hollywood Rebel by Burt Kearns. There's a quote from someone who saw like a very young Marlon Brando in a play, and Brando walks on stage at the beginning. He's eating an apple, and the guy watching the play was like, is that like a stagehand wandering on here? That person is not acting. He just seems so real. And that was like Brando's thing. He just like he brought such a genuineness to his parts, or at least most of them. Some of the later ones, he got a little hammy and started playing it up. But in his best, you know, he just seemed like a real person. And I think, you know, that's the key. You don't act the part. You kind of just be it. And you don't have to do some fucking methody shit where Daniel Day-Lewis is playing, you know, living the part all day long. I mean, that's totally ridiculous. But it's like bring yourself to the role. You know, act, and then when the cameras are done rolling, go be a normal person. You don't have to be some pretentious idiot. And I was a very small-time commercial actor in L.A. in the late 90s and 2000s. I was an editor, and, you know, I looked goofy. I had this goofy haircut, and I was weird. And one day, some director was just like, hey, come audition. you know. So I got a part in a commercial, and I joined the Screen Actors Guild, and I got an agent, and I wasn't particularly good or confident in myself yet. And, you know, the first couple of years, I would, like, you know, try and act. And I remember in one of the bigger commercials that I starred in, one of my first ones, I had one line. I was supposed to say California. And I was so freaked out, I could barely, like, say it. I was so self-conscious that it just sounded so weird every time it came out. I mean, eventually we did get a good take, but it was like, oh my God, one word and I can't fucking do it. But eventually, after so many auditions, you kind of stop giving a fuck and you just kind of, you kind of just take the script and you do it as you would do it. It's like you bring yourself to the part. If they like you, they'll go with you. But trying to act is like not the way to go. And I know Stanley Kubrick and David Fincher do like a fuck ton of takes. And I remember watching some dailies with David Fincher and the editor of Fight Club in the trailer. And there was like 70 or so takes of a scene with Brad Pitt. And it's like, at that point, the actors have like stopped acting. And they sometimes will just give you something real. And that could be gold. I mean, sometimes movies call for acting or being over the top or whatever. But, you know, usually the genuine stuff is like the real stuff that like sticks with you. And it's funny, I went to some audition, I'll never forget it, because this was right at the time that me and this girl broke up, and she was just completely psychologically traumatizing to me. I mean, it was almost sadistic, and I took it, but I did learn from it. But anyway, at the audition for some other commercial, they had brought in some kind of like gang-looking guys, like they obviously just brought them, you know, met them maybe in the streets, like real-life people, and said, hey, come to this audition. And one guy, he was kind of a tough looking guy with a bunch of tattoos, was sitting there going over lines. And I can't remember, maybe he looked over and asked me like how this thing goes, how the audition goes, you know, what do you do, any tips? And I just kind of said to him, I said, you know, don't try and act it, you know, just put that out, you know, just say the lines like you would yourself. That's what they're looking for. There's no one like you, so bring that to the table. Don't act or pretend, just be yourself. That's the key. And he was like so appreciative, and it made me feel good too. You know, it's like life is about helping other people out, you know, that's the point. And I haven't acted in a long time, but I still get a residual check from Universal Studios for some show my friend created that I was on several years ago. Yeah, every couple of years I get a check for usually about 10 cents. I literally got a check last week for 4 cents. It's like, you know, you guys, you can wait 20 years and send me a check for a dollar. Let's just do that. And speaking of acting, if you just want a knockout little video on acting, check out Oliver Reed on acting from the 1995 BBC documentary In the Deep End. It's playful at times, but Oliver Reed, even while drunk, is just spot fucking on in his analysis of just human behavior and acting. The journalist Paul Haney is he's going to try and like be an actor in a movie. So he comes to the, you know, Oliver Reed with the script for like an acting lesson. Some of it's jokey, but there's some stuff that, you know, Oliver Reed is being serious. And it's like the greatest 4 minutes ever. Oliver Reed just delivers such wisdom about acting. The journalist is going to be playing a villain in the part. And, you know, he has some terrible accent and he's kind of loud. And Oliver Reed's just like, the dangerous man has a great silence about him. And he says to him, don't blink, because, you know, the audience is supposed to be frightened of you. And if you start blinking like Bambi, it's not convincing. And Oliver Reed goes, you don't see a cobra blink, do you? But there's just so many great moments in it. It's pure goddamn genius. So please check that out. And yes, Oliver Reed, he was a big drinker and rest in peace. But I saw like an interview of him once and someone asked him, why do you drink? And he said, I've met some of the finest people ever in pubs, you know, which can be true. There's just something real about people getting together and drinking, letting their guard down and just being human. Yeah, sometimes pubs and bars can be ugly. It can bring out the worst or the best of people. But I've met some absolutely great, engaging, fantastic people in bars. You know, we're all trying to either have fun or escape or just commiserate. And, you know, doesn't matter who you are in a bar. You could be unemployed or a busboy or a doctor, but in the bar, we're all equal. And if you think you're better than someone out there, then fuck you and get out of here, okay? Okay, back to Brando. Which could be a band name. But anyway, I mean, he's a legend, obviously, at his best in his movies. He seemed like a real person, not just an actor. I mean, of course, there's the great On the Waterfront from 1954, directed by Alea Kazan, with Marlon Brando, Streets of San Francisco's Carl Malden, who currently resides at Pierce Brothers Cemetery, and a great Eva Marie Saint, Brando plays Terry Malloy, a snitch and ex-crooked boxer who has kind of a crisis of conscience and decides to do the right thing. And of course, Francis Ford Coppola is The Godfather from 1972, in which Brando plays the mob boss Don Vito Corleone. The studio didn't want Brando, but Coppola did some screen tests with like an aged-looking Brando with cotton stuffed in his mouth, and the studio was like, okay, hell yes. And here's a little Godfather trivia for you. What's the first line of The Godfather?
I believe in America.
Which is the line Bonacera is saying to Marlon Brando's Don Vito Corleone. And then the final line of The Godfather, Don Corleone. When Clemenza is kind of kneeling over to kiss Michael's ring, Marlon Brando has died, and Michael Corleone, played by Al Pacino, is the new Don Vito. So anyway, kind of a fun little piece of trivia. A couple great quotes. Brando says,
"A man who doesn't spend time with his family could never be a real man."
And a great moment is when Don Vito Corleone is yelling at his kind of this wannabe Hollywood star, Johnny Fontaine, played by Al Martino. And the character Johnny Fontaine was supposedly based on Frank Sinatra, which just made Sinatra furious. But yeah, the Johnny Fontaine is kind of bitching about stuff, and Brando stands up, slaps him, and yells,
"You can act like a man. What's the matter with you?"
And it doesn't necessarily mean man or whatever, woman. It just means human being. You can always try and, you know, stand up for yourself and do the right thing. And also maybe see Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing from 1989. It's worth a watch for sure. Kind of a modern-day classic. Danny Aiello is just completely awesome in it. When he yells, it's like the best thing ever. Get the fuck out of here! And speaking of acting like men, my man George C. Scott and Marlon Brando were in The Formula in 1980, directed by John G. Avildsen, who also did The Karate Kid. It's kind of a turkey with George C. Scott and Brando only together in like a few scenes, and Brando has some ridiculous makeup prosthetic, and he's kind of hamming it up in this movie. It ain't great, but if you're a fan of either actor, you got to see it. An old-ass one is from 1953, The Wild One, directed by Laszlo Benedek. It's about a biker gang led by Marlon Brando, who plays Johnny. In one famous scene, somebody says, "What are you rebelling against?" And Brando says, "What do you got?" It's kind of a corny, goofy movie. Brando is still kind of working out his style. And just a great one is the Western One-Eyed Jacks from 1961, actually the only movie ever directed by Marlon Brando. It stars Marlon Brando and, yes, the great Carl Malden again teaming up. Man, it's just well done. Just a great revenge Western. Fascinatingly, if that's a word, Stanley Kubrick was originally going to be the director, but he bailed out like 2 weeks before shooting started. But yeah, there's the immortal line that Marlon Brando shouts in it. "Get up, you big tub of guts." And of course, you got to see Coppola's Apocalypse Now from 1979 with Martin Sheen and Brando as the rogue, possibly insane Colonel Kurtz. It's a dark, crazy-ass, terrifying performance. The horror. It's based on Heart of Darkness by Joseph Conrad. And interestingly, Harvey Keitel was originally cast as Captain Willard, but he was replaced by Martin Sheen a little bit into shooting. And of course, you got to see 1951's A Streetcar Named Desire, directed by, again, Elia Kazan, based on the Tennessee Williams play. And funny, there used to be a video store, the good old days, on Santa Monica Boulevard called A Video Store Named Desire. It was a cool little joint, teeny, but just packed with VHSs. Oh, man, that was just, you know, the greatest era of my life so far. But yeah, Brando is the brute, abusive Stanley Kowalski. It's very stage-like, obviously. It was based on a play. It's dark. But again, it's one of those must-sees with the immortal line, "Stella," which was copied by the goofy Tommy Wiseau in his movie The Room from 2003. And to close with a fun kind of personal favorite of mine where Brando is playing kind of a comedic version of Don Corleone is The Freshman. From 1990, directed by Andrew Bergman with Brando and Matthew Broderick. Broderick is kind of a rube visiting New York. He gets mugged and he ends up getting involved with a local mob boss played by Brando. It's hilarious, totally well done, and just great. And lastly on Brando, there's a really interesting interview with Dick Cavett from 1973 on The Dick Cavett Show. It's on YouTube and whatnot. Brando is just so goddamn genuine in the interview. He's just using stuff around him. He's like, you could just see he's always kind of thinking about, you know, what his circumstances are and working off of that. I mean, he's just funny in it and totally no bullshit. And you just watch this thing and it's like, whoa, this guy blows me away. So anyway, Marlon Brando, rest in peace, my man. You were one of a kind. And slowly wrapping things up here, I had a few kind of rough things happen lately. It's been difficult. I've been trying to roll with the punches, as they say. But I've tried to keep a positive attitude. And while I can be, you know, disrespectful and indecent to myself quite often, I tried to never be that way to others. It's like, you know, abuse yourself all you want. If you have a problem, deal with it. But, you know, you don't take it out on others. I can loathe and abuse myself at times. When you start abusing or being indecent to other people, then that's when we're going to have a problem. You know, just be as nasty as you want to yourself. But don't be nasty to others unnecessarily. And you don't hit others. I mean, if someone hits you, okay, then you fight back. But otherwise, show some decency and deal with it yourself. And of course, you just don't fuck with family or friends. In that case, all bets are off. And if anyone was to mess with my mom, I would tear their head off. I mean, and I would gladly sacrifice myself for her. No bullshit. It's like, all I do is I joke all the time. And so when I rarely do get serious in some situation, you know, people know I'm being serious and I'm not messing around. And I'm not some tough guy at all, but generally people don't fuck with me. I'm 6'3", but still. And some of it, maybe my humor, which has, you know, helped me deflect sticky situations in the past. But yeah, you can live a heroic, genuine, brave life without ever punching anybody. And if you're gonna punch somebody, always punch above your weight. Never below. And that just goes for verbal sparring as well. If some intellectual person wants to, you know, mince words with me, it's like, okay, yeah, let's go. Let's go at it. I'm not intimidated. You know, but if you're speaking with someone or arguing with someone with a simpler person or, you know, someone of lesser intellect, and no judgment on that. But it's like, you know, you go to their level. You don't put them down. You know, you punch above your weight or you just help them out or whatever. You know, you talk down to people and fuck you. You're no better than them. And someone may seem simple as shit, but I can't see in their minds. You know, their inner world might be complicated and as dense and brilliant. But yeah, always punch above. And I talk so much about boxing because, I mean, life is kind of like boxing in a way. I mean, it's a battle. You're going to get bruised and bloodied, but you keep going, you know? And right now, when things are going a little bad for me, I'm like, okay, what's next? Bring it on. You know, my hatred of Sunnyvale, I swear to God, I think this place is satanic. It's really pushing me to my limits, but I'm going to get through it. You take it, you learn from it, and you try and be better. Life can beat you up, but you can persevere and not let it get you down. And just to close with the absolute genius line from Martin Scorsese's 1980s Raging Bull with Robert De Niro as Jake LaMotta. Jake LaMotta's fighting Sugar Ray Robinson. They fought an amazing 6 times, which LaMotta only won one of them. But anyway, LaMotta's just getting demolished, nailed against the ropes, punch after punch, and LaMotta does lose by a technical knockout. But his body never hits the canvas. He never gets knocked down. He loses, but to himself, he kind of wins in a way. And after the fight, De Niro, as Jake LaMotta, just bloodily walks over to Sugar Ray Robinson's corner and says, "Hey, Ray, I never went down, Ray. You never got me down." I mean, it's like one of the greatest, like, metaphorical and just awesome lines ever written by the co-director of my life, Paul Schrader, and Mardik Martin. It's like no matter how many hits you take, you move forward. You don't go down. You never got me down. I mean, there's nothing better than that. And hey, even if you do hit the canvas and get knocked down, you take a breath, you get your ass back up, and you get back in the fight. Who knows? You may get knocked out, or you may get a knockout. But you got to give it a shot. As a great hockey player, Wayne Gretzky, supposedly said, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So go for it. Take a shot. Get in the ring. You never know what'll happen. And just a quick quote to close. Carl Wallenda, he was a member of like the Flying Wallenda's High Wire Act. He actually ended up dying during a high wire act between two hotels in Puerto Rico. High winds knocked him off balance. He fell 10 stories. But anyway, he has a great quote. Life is on the wire. Everything else is just waiting.